This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How are you doing today?
Man, I am doing okay. Doing all right. Still trying to figure out this whole, you know, how do you smoke a pipe with a mask on thing? But getting better, you know?
I have seen creative solutions on the internet. There's been all kinds of, there's no shortage of memes. You know what I mean?
How do you do anything with a mask on now, right?
No, I know. Exactly.
We're making it work, man. It's been good. Our customers have been gracious. You know, we have our local ordinance, I guess, has... I may have mentioned last week, you know, we have to wear masks here in our state and in our local city, you know, which is fine. And everyone's doing their little part to, you know, whatever, keep it up. But what our restaurants are doing here locally is, you know, you have to, when you enter the establishment, you have to have your mask on. And then when you get to your table, you sit down, get to your table, then you can eat. Then you can remove your mask at that point. And so we're kind of following the same rules here at the shop and, you know, social distancing and all that. So far seems to be working okay. Everyone's healthy and just trying to truck along, man. So
it's smart. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. Since things started with the second surge, we really, you know, haven't gone out to eat at all. Still ordering food, you know, wanting to support the local businesses and that sort of thing. But doing more of the, you know, the delivery service and that sort of thing. But I was wondering about the... You know, because I see the restaurants say that they'll open up, but you also have to wear your mask. And I'm like, man, how does that?
How does that work?
I think there was like a robot chicken where Darth Vader was trying to like drink a milkshake, and he was like, well, how is this going to work? And I was like, anyway.
That's all robot chicken. I hadn't thought about that in a while. I actually got a haircut, which is if you haven't ever seen a photo of me, then you'll know it doesn't happen very often.
When I say haircut, Bo,
I'm talking like, you know, I had like 3 inches taken off kind of thing.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So
that's still, not too much for you.
It's still below shoulder length. Yeah. I'm still a raging hippie. But when I went to get my haircut, the stylist at this place I go to, she said, you have to keep your mask on. And I was like, well, how is this going to work? And she just very, very carefully, very deftly kind of worked her way around the mask as she cut my hair. And for part of it, I needed to remove one of the little ear loops. And so she asked if I would hold that half of my mask up while she removed the ear loop. And so, you know, if she can make it work, we can figure it out. We can make it work.
There's a path forward, man. Wow. That's great.
Yeah, pretty wild. So anyway, what's going on in Houston, man? Are y'all doing okay?
Yeah, we're doing good. Just, you know, just taking it a day at a time. You know, some days easier than others and some days not as easy as those. But we are doing our best to keep in high spirits. And, you know, one of the things I was reminded very recently, I had a listener of a different show write in, although we've gotten several emails like this for this show. But recently I got an email written in from a show that I've referenced before, Flash TV Talk, which is, you know, it was about television series of Flash, and obviously there's no TV series to talk about, so we're not doing that podcast right now. But just somebody, you know, mentioned just with you know, them being laid off work and everything, they've gone back and they know that we don't, you know, have new content that we can really talk about, but just how much it's meant to be able to listen in to some conversations and get kind of a sense of normalcy. I mean, the reality is, you know, despite the fact that right now we're take an awful lot of time to talk about it. You know, from a podcast standpoint, there's not a whole lot of, you know, direct impact for many of us that record remotely. I mean, you know, the experience is fairly the same. The content for all intents and purposes is fairly the same. And, you know, that kind of sense of normalcy, I think, you know, brings people a lot of comfort, at least for a couple moments. So, I know, you know, it was just a nice reminder that what we do, I know it's fun for us, man. We're able to get together and touch base with one another, but, you know, just recognizing that a lot of people, you know, this is one very small, seemingly insignificant way that we can actually serve our audience by hopefully providing you a little moment of relaxation. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today, man. We've got a great episode. Speaking of beautiful places to talk about this week. But first, we want to let everybody know, of course, if you're enjoying this podcast, you can help make it happen by heading over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio, where you can join the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club. And then also we want to let you know that we are putting out the call to those of you in your local communities. How are your pipe shops and pipe clubs getting through this time? Like, what are some of the best practices that you're seeing? We want to put together kind of a special episode where we're really highlighting some folks in the industry. And when I say the industry, I'm talking really more the brick and mortar industry, the folks that are part of the local pipe communities. What are some of the best practices you're seeing? This is a great chance to brag on your local pipe shop. So send those in, show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com. And yeah, can't wait to do that episode, man. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
I think it will too. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how folks are, pivoting and adjusting and just supporting each other kind of during this time. Couple announcements from our end. I don't know if I mentioned this in the past couple weeks. I meant to and have failed probably, but, we have dear, longtime friends of the show. And if you've listened for a long time, you've probably either heard or even interacted with, Mark Van Vranken from right outside New Orleans. Good, dear personal friend and long-time friend of the show. He, and I don't know which correct word, but I'm from the South. We don't typically care about that very much. But he and Padre Piper from YouTube, man, also a good friend of ours, have collaborated with the folks at Briar Report. Briar Report, a stellar, fantastic publication that is centered on the pipe tobacco world. And Briar Report TV, BRTV, they have kind of engaged with Padre Piper and Mark VV to do a series of tobacco reviews.
Oh, cool.
Now, they've done this before. They've worked their way through, different tobaccos before. But this time, they have been kind enough, they've honored us enough to actually select our Middle Earth series here at the Country Squire.
Ooh,
to go through and review. And so, pretty cool. They actually are going to work their way through the entire six blend lineup that we've got in the Middle Earth series. And so, what they're doing, it's kind of cool. They asked us to create a sampler pack, and so we've done that. You can actually go on our website and order the BRTV sampler pack, and that pack will send you everything that they're going to review, and then you can go ahead and smoke those blends, and then by the time they come out with their episodes discussing those blends, you'll have them right there with you to review right alongside them and kind of compare notes. So it's really cool, man. We're really thankful to be a part of that and honored that they would collaborate with us. So pretty cool. So check that out. And BRTV, Briar Report, obviously they won for our best of 2019 best pipe publication of the year, and certainly earn that every day. So check that out. Yeah. And then also, we in the very near future will have more of our 50th anniversary pipe tobacco, which is of course a tinned tobacco. It's a collaboration between us and Sutliff, and just a delicious full-bodied Virginia Perique crumble cake, and just really, really well done. Very proud of it. Very, very thankful for how it came out. And we, had one run of that. It went really well. And so expect more of that here in the very, very near future. And that'll be one way you can help us celebrate our 50th anniversary.
Man, so, should be good.
Cool.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Can't wait to get. I'm sure we've talked about this before, but we just talked about this last week. Have I seen the tin art for this yet? Because you know.
Yeah, I know. It's very important to you, right? I sent you a tin at one point, and you've probably
That's
got it.
Right. Actually, you know what?
You've got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
I sent you, not too long ago, actually, I think I sent you a care package. But, one thing we haven't done, and we probably ought to do out of, just selfish promotion. we probably ought to take maybe a Squire or a Tobacco Talk episode or something, and just kind of use that as a chance to discuss our 50th anniversary blend and kind of how it was made and how it came up and what our vision was for that, and some tasting notes and things of that nature. So we'll try to do that. That's something we haven't done yet that we probably ought to do.
All right.
Anyway, it's been a great tobacco. We're very thankful for it, and I hope we can keep it going.
that'll be a good one, man. I'm excited for that. Okay, well, great, man. We've got a great episode, of course, today. We are, I guess, you know, reopening a series would be one way to say it. You know, obviously here at Country Squire Radio, we've got a number of ongoing series that we do from time to time, where we, you know, cover different topics. It's kind of a fun way to spread out topics. So, for example, you mentioned, of course, Squire Select, where we kind of pair pipe tobaccos and whiskeys or tobacco talks, which are a little bit more reviews. Well, very recently, we started a brand new series called Pipe Capitals of the World. Now, we were really excited when this kind of idea came about. I want to say it was actually a user, or rather a listener generated idea that kind of came up with somebody asking us to kind of explore various places that are significant to the pipe world. And the first one we did was on Denmark. Now, you know, I'll go ahead and pull back the curtain a little bit and say that one of the things that you know, whenever we kind of look at a new series, there's always a question of like, is this an episode or is this a series? Is there enough content in here to stretch out over enough amount of time, theoretically an infinite amount of time, in order for us to really qualify this as a series? And you know, man, pipe capitals of the world. Absolutely. There's so many different ways to look at this. There's so many different cities, regions, places, countries, of course, where, you know, there is such a rich pipe, tobacco history, pipe or pipe tobacco history. And in this situation, man, I was excited because we kicked things off with Denmark, and you know, when we were talking about this in preparation that we were going to reopen this series, I encouraged you. I said, man, you know, let's look at this. Let's, you know, don't
think big, baby. Well,
on the contrast, I was like, think small, right? Think you know, we want this to be a large series. We want to be able to get like very, very, you know, microscopic in the way that we kind of look at these different pinpoints on the map, and you know, don't feel like you have to do a country. You could do a city. You could do a neighborhood. You know, like let's really get in there.
I could do a shop if I wanted to.
You could do a shop if you wanted to. Let's really kind of like, you know, unpack what it even means to be a pipe capital of the world. So John David, I am super excited with that kind of, you know, charge to find out what you chose as kind of the pipe capital of the world that we're looking into today.
Yeah, I chose a continent. I did, man. You know, it's funny. When you think of pipe capitals world, obviously capital, you think of a city or a, you know, kind of a specific building or location. But, you know, there's a lot of obvious places like that that we'll get to maybe later in the series, places where, you know, famous pipe manufacturers are located, where, you know, some of the best briar in the world is harvested, or, you know, very specific leaves are grown or processed. I mean, we could, you know, talk about those things a lot and will, but I wanted to throw a curveball here very early in the series and mix it up some. And so, you know, Bo, when you think of tobacco, you know, a lot of times we think of, you know, when we think of pipe tobacco, we think of America. We think of the American DNA and the founding of our country and how the, you know, Native Americans interacted with the early settlers, you know, Sir Walter Raleigh and all this kind of stuff. And you know, so when you think of that, you think of places like Virginia and Maryland and Kentucky and Tennessee and, you know, these, you know, places where, you know, this stuff was cultivated and really became a part of our DNA. And so, you know, that's kind of what we have in our mind, you know, with pipe tobacco. A lot of folks are like, oh, pipe tobacco, that's, you know, that's Kentucky, that's Tennessee, that's Virginia, that's North Carolina, you know, Tobacco Row. And so, you know, you think about that, it's kind of neat. But where do you think on earth the most Virginia pipe tobacco is grown?
I mean, I feel like I have to answer that with Virginia.
And you would be wrong, okay. Because the answer the answer is Africa.
I bless the rains of Africa. Toto going.
That's it, baby. That's it. You know, it's amazing. We're talking today about Africa, pipe capital of the world. It's funny. We'll talk about some specific countries here in Africa soon, but I want to talk about the whole continent and its growth in pipe tobacco, because the modern pipe tobacco industry would not exist. The delicious blends that we know and love, some of the most iconic blends even, would not exist today if it weren't for tobacco cultivated in Africa. And I wanted to discuss that. So here's our curveball, right? We're going to talk about African pipe tobacco. Kind of neat. Capital of the world. We think of America in terms of that, pipe tobacco central, and obviously, of course, the birthplace of it and all that kind of stuff. I mean, modern pipe tobacco, we certainly can claim that. But in 1970, the United States produced 363,000 hectares of tobacco.
I'm sorry. Whoa. A what now?
A hectare. A hectare is, if I'm remembering right, it's 2.5 acres or thereabout. So over 350,000, over 360,000 hectares of pipe tobacco, okay, grown, or tobacco wow. in general grown in the United States.
Dare I say, that's a hectare of a lot of pipe tobacco.
Gosh, you just and those are the numbers in 1970. All of Africa in 1970, the entire continent, just 203,000 hectares of tobacco grown on the African continent. And so in 1970, 80% more tobacco was grown in the United States than it was in the entire continent of Africa. And, we fast forward to 2014 numbers, and the numbers are dramatically different. The United States, 153,000 hectares of of tobacco in general, much of which is pipe tobacco, we'll talk about shortly. And then in all of Africa, the entire continent, 404,000 hectares. And so that's, we went from, 203 in 1970 to 404. And of course, the, American numbers have dropped over half. And so, just to give you that in acres, 404 hectares of tobacco, that's about a million acres of tobacco.
Wow.
It's a million acres. Yeah. That's a lot of tobacco. Yeah. So it's amazing. Places we used to think of, those names that I mentioned earlier, obviously, North Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, parts of Pennsylvania, a lot of these, the modern names sprinkled along with those that are just as important nowadays to the industry are, places like Malawi, Tanzania, Mozambique, Zimbabwe, Uganda, Kenya. It's really fascinating, to kind of think about, the connections there and how those things have changed over time. So pretty wild. Tobacco has been grown in some capacity in Africa for centuries. In the 19th century, 1800s, tobacco was produced in Central and South Africa to some degree, but major growth, came to that region really by the late 1800s. And of course, it's tied up with so much of the history of Africa. It's so rich and full, and a lot of it, with its dealings with the outside world has been frankly sad. And so the tobacco, portion of it is tied along with that, right? We, can't divorce those two things, but major growth in high quality pipe tobacco began in the late 1800s. In 1893, 40 pound, and this is 1893, okay, this is over, 25-something years ago, as we're recording, 40 pounds of tobacco was shipped from southern Rhodesia, which is, now part of Zimbabwe, but was shipped from southern Rhodesia to Great Britain. All right, 40 pounds of tobacco from southern Rhodesia to Great Britain. That was the first tobacco leaf imported to Great Britain from its empire since the loss of the American colonies. So Africa brought tobacco back to the British Empire is what I'm trying to say.
Interesting. Yeah.
Kind of fascinating. They were like, well, we've grown tobacco before. Like, wait, let's go try that again. And of course, Africa has such, the land availability and that type of thing. And And so really, really fascinating. It kind of as an aside, you know, this area, this kind of, but you know, region in southern Africa, which is now Zimbabwe, we've referred to it so often in the past as Rhodesia or Southern Rhodesia. You know, that if that name sounds familiar to the pipe smoker, there's a reason for that.
Well, I was gonna ask, but
yeah.
I mean, it's you hear Rhodesia and immediately. You think of the Rhodesian pipe, which,
yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, because we've done an episode on the Rhodesian pipe before, and am I wrong in assuming that that actually has more to do with the dog, the Rhodesian dog, than it does the Rhodesian continent, or not continent, but country? Or?
No, the connection you're making there is actually the Rhodesian is kind of the sister pipe to the bull.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay.
That's it. And so, you know, we always talk about Rhodesians have a round shank and bulldogs have a squared shank. That's it, kind of the traditional definition. Some people will say, you know, bulldogs are straight diamond shank pipes and Rhodesians are bent diamond shank pipes. I don't know. You know, pipe smokers, we love to argue about this kind of stuff. But typically,
no, it's true.
Typically, I've heard the round shank is for Rhodesian, right? You've got the diamond shank for bulldog with the kind of angular bowl and then the round shank for Rhodesian. So yeah, we have a pipe shape named for this area. The area actually got its name from a man named Cecil Rhodes, who, you know, was a British guy. He was an explorer and a
John David. You didn't have his name is Cecil. We know he's a British guy.
Yeah. I know. No clarification needed, right?
Yeah, no clarification needed. It's like, oh, he's British? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Of course.
Okay, that's redundant. No, you know, Cecil Rhodes, you know, during that era was part of the British exploration, you know, sophisticated, you know, folk that wanted to exploit, you know, kind of frankly a defenseless Africa, you know, and so he went into that area in the 1880s and really, you know, kind of took advantage of, you know, of the availability there of the workforce and, you know, land and you know, lack of, you know, connectivity to the outside world and all those things. And so that's when the, you know, major growth of quality pipe tobacco began on the African continent was during that season. And so, yeah, just kind of fascinating that because of that, it brought, you know, the cultivation of that premium tobacco back to the British Empire. So kind of,
you know, I never really thought about it from the standpoint of like after the Revolutionary War, how, you know, trade dealings, not great between America and Britain.
Yeah, man, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, it disrupted entire, you know, entire economies and not just forms of government, you know, so. Pretty fascinating. Of course, the, you know, tobacco industry was no different, from that. So Brightleaf in particular, you know, took off in this area and was flue cured in the American tradition. Brightleaf being that that Virginia tobacco leaf that I'm extremely partial to, you know, lots of natural sugar and, you know, tobacco that has that nice kind of honey color to it that, you know, just so packed full of flavor that you love to blend with. And of course, the most popular pipe tobacco in the world. And then the flue curing, you know, they began that, you know, in that American way of, you know, applying heat to the leaf, but not in a direct form. And so, you know, the tobacco was able to be cured without, you know, receiving as much of the, you know, the smoke particles and that kind of thing. And so, you know, that area was, you know, kind of, it started that that tradition, and the growth continued. By 1950, Zimbabwe alone produced 100 million pounds of tobacco a year, and that's, you know, it's breathtaking. The numbers are truly breathtaking when you think about it. And that was in 1950. Before you know, certainly it's much bigger today. You know, in between then and now, I mean, we can think about the history of Africa, the colonialization and the decolonialization and the, you know, warring factions and, you know, economic progress in some areas and stagnation in others. And so, you know, it's just a lot of drama, you know, that we see over the past 200 years in that part of the world. And so the tobacco production, you know, kind of mirrored that. It was up and down between then and now. But today has stabled out to some degree. The same area that produced 100 million pounds of tobacco a year today produces over 500 million pounds of tobacco. it's truly breathtaking. Yeah. And so, you know, when I say, you know, Africa is a pipe capital of the world, the entire continent, and, you know, we're talking about these beautiful, you know, countries, places like Tanzania, Mozambique, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Kenya. You know, we're talking in a very true, very integrated way into our into what you're enjoying on a daily basis as a pipe smoker. It's really pretty fascinating. So, yeah, you know, why is this? Why did this take place? You know, isn't tobacco, like so many crops, dependent on climate and soil conditions and, you know, specific geography and all this kind of stuff? And of course, the answer is, well, yeah, it is. But, you know, Africa has a lot of that. And, you know, there's many factors at play here. And, you know, the first thing, obviously, we're going to, you know, have to point to is the economics of it. I mean, that's just kind of the elephant in the room. Well, it's probably cheaper to grow and cultivate and, you know, process tobacco in Africa than it is in the United States. You know, but there are other factors, too. Soil quality and the, you know, location and things like that, in some ways are very good in Africa for specific types of tobaccos. So, you know, to the economic point, a place like Zimbabwe, the largest African producer, the average annual income is $3,600 a year in Zimbabwe. So, you know, just very, you know, these are not particularly developed countries, you know, compared to the Western world and, you know, certainly the, you know, lavish lifestyle that we get to enjoy every day. But, you know, in the United States, that same number is $60,000, right? And so, you know, just the, you know, cost of labor and all that stuff. We see that everywhere, right? I mean, even in our own state, you know, or my state, your former state of Mississippi, you know, you still claim it, you love it. But, you know, this used to be a major center of furniture production. And a lot of that, of course, has gone overseas to, you know, places like Myanmar and Thailand and China and other places like that. And so
now that right there, man, like yeah. right down the street from my old studio, there was a bunch of old furniture factories.
Yeah. We just, you know, had a lot of that, particularly up in the northeast part of the state. You had, you know, Lane and Broyhill companies. I mean, they were based out of there. And so, yeah, just, you know, really interesting. But a lot of that, you know, for you know, it's actually cheaper for us in some ways to, you know, take the raw product, ship it to China, create the stuff, and then put it back on a boat and send it halfway across the world again. It's cheaper to do all that than it is to produce a couch in Tupelo.
Yeah.
You know, So it's just kind of, you know, it's fascinating. That's part of our, you know, for good or for bad. We all have opinions on globalization and all that kind of stuff. But that's just the nature of, you know, the reality today. You know, the danger in all of this, right, we talk about the amount of, you know, pipe tobacco that's grown in Africa. And, you know, the thing that obviously we want to say is, you know, the danger here is that, you know, we protect wages of farmers and, you know, make sure that child labor is out of the question and things like that. And a matter of fact, the U.S. is even banned for periods of time, you know, imports from, you know, specific countries because they've been, you know, just wanting to protect, you know, the local populations and that kind of thing. But, you know, as things continue to develop and processes get, you know, better and the pressure for, you know, better working conditions is more, you know, then obviously practices get more perfected and the, you know, quality of the product gets more perfected as well. And so, yeah, it's just kind of fascinating. In some ways, Africa is best equipped to grow premium pipe tobacco. The bright leaf that is so prolific there, you know, it specifically likes, it's interesting. You would think what kind of plant would really, really love to grow in sandy, thin, nutritionally poor soil, right? I mean, what would want to grow in that? And you think like, okay, well, maybe a cactus. But, you know, the answer to that is in a lot of varieties is bright leaf tobacco, which, you know, these kind of conditions are abundant in some of these countries, which can grow this, you know, specific type of crop where, you know, they may not be able to grow other things. And so, yeah, it's just, you know, kind of fascinating. It's in some ways tailor-made for that part of the world. And you know, Africa has a diversity there, you know, not just Virginia leaf, Burley's, fire-cured tobaccos. You know, we're talking about kind of the whole, all the tobaccos that would go into making a really good Black Cavendish. You know, these are grown right there and very likely a part of one of your favorite blends that that you smoke even today.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of fascinating. As politics changed in the United States, too, obviously, you know, with the kind of anti-smoking culture and all that type of stuff, you know, there was a lot of pressure for U.S. farmers to kind of, you know, leave tobacco behind or maybe switch to something different as far as, you know, what they cultivated. You know, and so Africa was poised for growth during this era, too. You know, the 1970s, 80s, 90s, you know, you had them kind of stepping up, filling the void with the, you know, efforts to reduce production of tobacco in the United States. And so, you know, what's interesting is that the reduction of the production of tobacco went down faster than the use of tobacco in the U.S. And so, you know, there was still this pent-up need, and, you know, particularly with pipe tobacco, which was king, you know, the 70s and 80s, everyone smoking a, you know, big old good pipe. And so, you know, there was a need for that, and enters the, you know, the players in Africa, particularly players like Kenya and Zimbabwe and Malawi and Tanzania, you know, that stepped up to the plate for this period. And of course, you know, took that over. And so, you know, and two, in some ways, the government, you know, in the United States was really encouraging farmers to make the switch, you know, from everything from soybeans to sweet potatoes. You know, I mean, just, you know, here, let's give you some kind of incentive, whether it's financial, you know, directly, or maybe a tax incentive or something to make that switch. And so so that happened, you know, pretty regularly over the next, you know, next several decades there. But and it brings us to, you know, kind of where we are today. And that is that so much, a very large percentage of tobacco that's used for pipes is grown in Africa today. And like I said, a great variety, you know, anything from, you know, some of the most high quality Burleys to the most sophisticated, nuanced Virginias that have a lot of natural sweetness. And I'm not talking about just drugstore tobacco, obviously. We're talking about tobaccos that are used by, you know, folks named Mac Baron, or, you know, Peter Stokeby, Lane and all its, you know, affiliated brands that, you know, come from Lane, and the Planta tobaccos, Kolhaas and Kopp, that we love. You know, there are some producers, you know, that shy away from using it, that really are trying to stick to more American tobaccos. And so, you know, folks like Cornell and Deal, GL Peace, my understanding is they try to use the old belt leaf more often, the old, you know, Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland, you know, they're trying to, you know, kind of feature that leaf. But again, these are American companies, you know, these are, you know, you don't see,
right.
You don't,
that has more to do with the story than it does with the actual
quality. It kind of does. I mean, yeah. Embracing the home product and the home team and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, that's understandable to some degree, you know, but it's interesting. Some of my favorite tobaccos in the world, if you've listened to the show long enough, number one, you probably need a therapist. And number two, you you know that I really love, you know, Orlick Golden Sliced and the Mac Baron HH Pure Virginia. Those are both top three tobaccos for me. I'm just a Virginia lover, and, you know, particularly like that, you know, brighter leaf. And those feature even Orlick. It features African tobacco. And so that bright leaf is grown right there. HH Bold Kentucky. Kentucky. You know, so many of the Peter Stokeby flake tobaccos, these have, you know, African high quality leaves in there that, you know, have gotten better and better over the decades. You know, just some interesting facts. Zimbabwe is the sixth largest, just that country alone, is the sixth largest tobacco grower in the world. 95% of Zimbabwe's tobacco is that flue-cured tobacco. It's that bright leaf that, you know, that we love. And 20% of the world's flue-cured tobacco is actually grown in this one region. 20%. And so, you know, you think about how much that is. And
but not cured there. Is that correct? Like, it's grown there, but not cured there?
Well, some of it's cured there. Yeah. Yeah. Some
right.
Of it's
but I guess
there.
What I'm saying is it's not,
it's not blended there. It's not, you know, packaged and, you know, made into, you know, tinned up and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's flavored and blended in places that we might be a little more familiar with, like Copenhagen and, you know, Richmond, Virginia, Sutliff factory and places like that. But yeah, yeah, it's grown in these locations. So yeah, 31,000 metric tons of tobacco were grown in Uganda. This was, I believe, in 2017, and in the state of Virginia, that same number was 21,000 metric tons. And so, you know, there's more Virginias grown in Uganda than there are in Virginia. pretty amazing, yeah. And so, you know, we've just seen the development there, but it's a part of our, you know, it's a part of the pipe story, just like it's a part of, you know, so many other stories in different trades and different, you know, production, you know, industries and things of that nature. It's just, you know, it's how the world has gone. And so the tobacco from Africa, you know, has gotten better. It's gotten more, you know, fruitful and you know, the production has gotten more efficient. And it winds up in places like, you know, Houston, Texas and Jackson, Mississippi. So
I'm kind of curious in terms of like distribution from that standpoint, because, you know, obviously with, and I mean, this is going to be true of any pipe tobacco capital of the world. If it's not, you know, here in the United States, is it's got a trek to get from the field to your bowl. Right. And so I'm kind of curious, especially for, you know, blenders and, you know, you mentioned, of course, you know, like the notion of kind of having this relationship with where the pipe tobacco comes through. Like, where would somebody even, like, if I wanted to go direct to the source, is that even possible? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you have to buy an extreme bulk, I would imagine.
Of course. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, these tobacco, you know, tobaccos come to the manufacturers through brokers. There are brokers that know and deal with, you know, the grower there locally that have some associations. And then, you know, those brokers deal between the farmer and, you know, the manufacturer has a buyer. And so they're constantly looking for leaf, trying samples, in some cases going to the farm and you know, seeing it firsthand, how it's cultivated. And yeah, and that's how, you know, that's how this stuff is worked in some ways. The farmer has its own agent, just like a pro football, you know, star would have its own agent. And that person is out there looking for the best deals for them and trying to find the best buyer or vice versa. The, you know, the buyer is trying to find the best product. And so they have a representative that's hunting the stuff down. And, you know, before you know it, they're like, okay, this is high quality stuff. We can use it for, you know, product X, Y, and Z that we're producing. And I want you to send me, you know, 38, you know, tons of this stuff or whatever. And so it winds up in these huge crate boxes in places, like we said, like the MacBaren factory in Denmark or the Stokeby, you know, Scandinavian Tobacco Group factories, the Lane factory that we toured in Atlanta. May it be remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to reference that because, of course, you know, while we were there, we saw just all these like incredible, like, these, you know, just crates and packages, and they had labels from just all over the world and just all these different African countries and everything.
Yeah.
And
even just like, Uganda and Namibia. And, you know, I mean, that's where, some of the leaf comes from, Mozambique, you know? And, yeah, I mean, we got to see that firsthand. So pretty powerful.
And it was not a small amount. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was one of the things that I think was just incredible to see, is just like this massive amount of pipe tobacco. I remember your eyes. You were like Scrooge McDuck looking in the gold room. I want to swim in it.
Want to swim in pipe tobacco? Yeah, it would definitely be me.
It would be you.
Can I just have enough to put in like a kiddie pool? You know, like one of those little blue plastic kiddie pools, just to like roll around it. By the way, I always thought like Scrooge McDuck like diving into the diving into the bed of coins. I just think that would really hurt.
That was an impossibility. Yeah.
Yeah, pipe tobacco would be a little more reasonable, I think. So anyway.
That's great. Well, man. All right. Well, Africa, pipe capital of the world. You went with the continent. This is going to be a short series.
Yeah. The next continent we'll talk about, Antarctica.
Oh, my goodness. We're just going to knock them all out.
Awesome. Antarctican pipe tobacco, no, some of the best in the world, and man, grown right there on the African continent.
Yeah, man. Well, good stuff. Well, hey, you know, one of the great things is, you know, if your interest is piqued, if this has kind of got your mouth watering a little bit, if you want to, try out some, grab your nearest Virginia tobacco and really kind of experience all the flavors that have been grown and cured and aged over time, the best way to do so with a good quality smoke from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, that is right. We love Missouri Meerschaum pipes, and obviously we enjoy talking about them every week. I am a Virginia smoker and think Virginia's are smoked best out of I spoke about this recently, actually, to our friend Brian on his show. He was gracious enough, I think I mentioned, to have me on, and we talked about some different things, and I talked about smoking Virginia flakes. Most people, it seems like I know, smoke Virginia flakes out of a tall, more narrow bowl. And I've kind of gravitated over the past few years to kind of a more Prince-shaped pipe, kind of a squatty bowl that is a little wider around, so you can kind of see down in there and manipulate those flakes while you're smoking it. And one pipe from Missouri Meerschaum that fits the bill on this is the Morgan corncob pipe that they have. The Morgan corncob pipe from Missouri Meerschaum. It's just a really nice kind of squat oval bowl. It's almost like a little apple-shaped pipe or a Prince. Very nice. It comes in a natural finish and a polished finish, just a very inexpensive pipe. Ranges from under $6 to under $10. And you can get it from the source in Washington, Missouri, at Missouri Meerschaum. Go to corncobpipe.com. Click on cobs. All their great products are listed right there. And we know if you get one, you'll love it.
Absolutely. And be sure, if you happen to be smoking the Morgan this week, be sure to take a picture, tweet yourself doing so. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know you appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week this week coming in from Brian. Brian writing in saying, "Hello, JD and Bo. Many thanks for a fantastic podcast. I download and listen regularly. Great education and fantastic entertainment. Question: a year ago, I took the family on our first European vacation, and one of the stops was Dublin, where I made a pilgrimage to the Peterson shop."
Ah, the bucket list, pipe shop, right?
we need to make a bucket list of pipe shops out there. That could be an unserious
no kidding.
Of course, I had to buy a pipe at the flagship store. I decided on Rusticated Aran XL02, and in all of the excitement, I made a mistake of not running a cleaner through the pipe before I bought it. Unfortunately, now I have a pipe that smokes great, but I can't run a cleaner through the pipe. It stops where the stem and the shank come together. Is there anything that I can do to fix this on my own? Thanks. And again, that is Brian.
Man, that is one thing about a Peterson, man. Gosh, I have this, the thing about Petersons, man. I won't pick one off the shelf unless I can run a cleaner through it. And it's one of those things that, you're able, I think their production is getting better. Their drilling is getting more precise where, you can, more often than not now run one through a lot of their pipes. But Peterson over the past, few decades has had an issue with their drilling. And so I would highly recommend if you have the ability to, or you're thinking about buying a Peterson, see if you can run a cleaner through it first. If it's if you're purchasing it through a online retailer, which so many people do now, see what their return policy is. If that's a real big issue for you, and you're thinking about it, if the pipe cleaner, it's not a big issue for everybody, but if it is, you want to be able to run a pipe cleaner all the way through your pipe without taking it apart. If that's a big issue for you and you want to buy a Peterson, just check with your online retailer what their return policy is and all that kind of stuff to make sure that you can bring it back. But Petersons, they kind of have this. I've had $500 Petersons in our shop that have not been able to run a pipe cleaner, and so some of that is their the system that they have with the chamber in there, the basin to collect, the moisture and saliva. Some of those are just literally not drilled for that. It's produced so that that's impossible, and they know that going into it. Others from their lines, the Aaron in particular, this. You would like to think this is a pipe that would have been able to run a cleaner, but the XL02, very popular, it is one of their more standard pipes. Beautiful pipe, and I'm sure it looks great, and hopefully it smokes really good. It sounds like it does, but honestly, Brian, you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it, man. You could have a new stem cut, by one of these pipe maker pros in the United States or something, and see if they could line up the airway in a new tenon and stem to the airway at the end of the mortise hole of the shank. But you're really just not going to be able to do anything about it. So it's just part of it. And we've talked about too before how that affects a lot of other things with your pipe. It's going to build up more moisture in that area. Your pipe will smoke hotter because of that. But a lot of pipes do that. A lot of pipes can't run a cleaner, and they still smoke good enough, or some of them smoke great, and you just kind of get through it, and you wait till your pipe cools down to take it apart to clean it, and that's part of the experience. So just truck along, man. Enjoy your pipe, and maybe the next one you get, you can run that cleaner through. But at least this one, you always you got it at the shop in Dublin, and that's pretty special.
Yeah, no, that's right. You got a good story and a life lesson. And if that's not worth it, I don't know what it is.
You forgive the pipe for the special, case that you bought it from the source. So
there you go.
Cool.
Exactly. There you go. All right. Well, great question there, Brian. And hey, if you've got a pipe question for us, be sure to write into the show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quick fire questions.
Ow!
All right, man. Quick fire questions coming in from Alex H. Ice cream edition.
Ice cream edition? What?
Yeah. Here we go.
I love ice cream.
I know. It's so good. here we go. Vanilla or chocolate?
Chocolate.
All right. I'm gonna lose some friends over this one, man. I'm a fan of vanilla,
There's no shame in that.
No, I want to make sure that this is very clear. So, because I already know that the emails, the hate messages are coming in. Let me be very clear. Vanilla is a canvas. Okay. Vanilla is a canvas.
Okay.
And if I want some chocolate, I can sprinkle on some chocolate chips or some M&Ms or something of that nature. If I want some fruit, I can sprinkle on some strawberries. It is a canvas for this multitude of flavors. Chocolate is fine. I like chocolate, but I like chocolate like on top of, like chocolate fudge. Ice cream is too much chocolate for me. So yes, vanilla is a canvas. I'm going with vanilla.
That's why I always say that's why they make chocolate and vanilla. You know, you get to pick.
Yeah, send hate feedback to @JohnDavidCole. Right. Sprinkles or whipped cream?
Whipped cream. I feel like I have very quick answers on these. Like, this is truly quick.
No,
quick
you know your ice cream. That's good.
No, it's whipped cream.
All right, between the two, whipped cream. Sprinkles are good for texture, bad for flavor.
Yep.
Cone or bowl?
Cone.
I'm a bowl guy, and as a Mississippian, I'm surprised that you're a cone guy.
I like a waffle cone, man. Wait, how are you going to turn down a waffle cone?
Because outside in the summer heat, man, it melts way too fast, and it starts
that's why
dripping
you
gotta
eat
down
it quick.
Okay. Fair point. Store-bought or homemade?
My grandmother used to make homemade ice cream. I don't have a lot of experience with it, you know, so I'm sure it's better. So I guess I ought to say homemade. But, store-bought, that's what we do. And I love it.
Man, I finally gave up on homemade this last past. We took a trip down to the coast and everything. And we tried for the last time to make homemade ice cream the way that we used to when I was kids. And I was like, you know what? This is just not worth the sound. We can never quite get the consistency. It's always too hot. So you can never keep the ice melt like frozen long enough. So yeah, give me store-bought any day, anytime. I will take store-bought right now. Let's go.
Yeah,
store-bought. And then finally, ice cream or gelato?
Ice cream. Gelato's cute. I like it. I mean, it's fun, but man, ice cream.
I mean, I put away some gelato like long time ago when we went to Italy. That was like, I first had gelato in Italy, which was kind of cool. And they had like gelato shops at like every single corner for these like tiny, like, you know, they give you like these really, really, like really thin cones with this like little tiny scoop of ice cream on it, or gelato on it. And you know, you try a lot of flavors. It's kind of like this fun walk and eat type deal, but come on, no man, if I'm having ice cream, give me some ice cream.
I would have picked you for a gelato guy. I'm gonna be honest. Like
I don't dislike gelato. Like,
you're the guy when we took a group to New Orleans, you're the guy that like everyone was getting a, you know, whiskey sour or old fashioned, and you were like, I'll have a glass of Pinot Grigio. Thank you very much.
Man, you will not let me live that down.
Nah,
you'll never
live that down.
Come on. All right. We know between the two of us who's the gin drinker and who's the whiskey drinker.
That's right. Look, I like white wine too. It's just, it's a great memory. Great memory.
Well, there you go. There's the ice cream edition, Alex. And hey, thanks for sending those in. If you've got some quick fire questions for us, send them into the show at countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show at countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments. Listener feedback.
Listen to feedback. First one coming in from Gene B. Gene has to say this. I really like the tin design on the God tins. All right, this is from back when we did the Tobacco Talk recently.
The Savinelli God series that they did. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. So I said, I really like the tin design on the God tins. I like how it works as a series. I'm hoping that there are more to come since there are plenty of Roman gods left. My favorite of the group has been Juno. Upon opening the tin, I was welcomed by the sweet, grassy smell of Virginias. The flakes are broken and comprised of lighter and darker components. Moisture content was ideal and didn't require extra drying. Took a few lights and to really get it going, with a light tamping in between, sweet high notes throughout, some medium range supporting. Strength to me is between mild and medium, produced a little moisture, which was easy to remove with a cleaner. I think it stacks up great against the other straight Virginias going into the summer. So Gene B writing a great little review right there.
I love that review. That's from our friend Gene Bowker, who is a longtime supporter of the show, Squire Club member, and we just are very thankful for Gene over the years. And thanks for writing in. I love that review, man. You ought to do that professionally.
I'm telling you, man, that's good. All right, so the last one we got Scott E, who says, have you guys done an episode that touches on blends with cigar leaf? If not, how about a tobacco talk on the topic? Love the show. Thanks, guys. And again, that is coming in from Scott E.
I think we have done one, Bo. We'll have to go back and look. But I think we have done a cigar leaf centric episode. But some good tobaccos there that feature that, and certainly plenty more to be talked about if we haven't mentioned them before.
Yeah, I think you're right. That does sound familiar. At the very least, I think we've had a pipe question of the week in the past that was specifically related to getting cigar smoker. Like someone had a friend who was a cigar smoker, but they wanted to get them on pipe tobacco. So what was a good,
like cigar leaf? To help them transition over, kind of thing.
Something like that.
Some good cigar leaf, available, tins, the tobaccos that are available. I'll experiment with it. We used to have a couple blends that had cigar leaf in it here at the Country Squire. We don't anymore. I've got a whole bunch of cigar leaf here that I need to tinker with, but it's one of those tobaccos, when you're smoking it, you in a pipe, you just really need to have a full stomach. So, but it's good. It's very robust.
Good stuff. And hey, great question. I tell you what, I will go back and take a look at it, because like I said, I do think that we have talked about it in our archive. So be sure to check back there. If not, if I am remembering correctly, and it was just a pipe question of the week, it may be worth going back and either doing a tobacco talk on, if not a full episode. So great suggestion right there, Scotty. And we will, we'll definitely follow back up with it. And then, of course, you can always keep up with us. We love getting this feedback in. It's a great way to help out the show by heading over to iTunes and writing us a review. Also, if you want to help out the show in a monetary way, that is also very, very welcome by joining the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club over at patreon.com/countrysquireradio. You can also keep up with us throughout the week. I'm at The Real Bo York.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop @_countrysquire.
And, of course, all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Man, we bless the pipe tobacco grown in Africa. Bless the pipe tobacco. You have no idea what I'm referring to. Like, this is the...
no clue. I do know you should keep your day job, but
is true.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I don't anticipate seeing you at the Hard Rock in downtown Houston there anytime soon.
But, hey, you're right.
Or the House of Blues or whatever it is. Yeah, but anyway, that's great. Yeah, man, African tobacco, pipe capital of the world, and such a center of tobacco production for the pipe community. And I'm hoping a lot of people came away today. Or my hope with this today was to throw that curveball, and that a longtime pipe smoker that thought, maybe they knew exactly what they were smoking. Well, maybe they have something to think about now. You know, man, I was consuming something that I didn't know everything about, and now, it's interesting to learn that some of your favorite tobaccos are grown in places like Zimbabwe and not necessarily just in North Carolina. So, kind of cool. We love the North Carolina tobacco too. We wouldn't be here without it. But just kind of fun. So, yep. Pretty good.
There you go. Can I just ask you one favor for the future?
Yeah.
Next time, can we please focus on a much smaller region? I would love for this series to last more than like 7 episodes.
No, man. I don't know. I was thinking for next time, we'll go with the Western Hemisphere.
Oh, my gosh. That? All right. Next time, pipe planets of the world. Pipe planets of the universe. No,
right.
Series.
I don't know. Well, we can do moons. There's like, Triton and Enceladus. And,
wow.
All those.
Hey, man, let's go have a week.
See you, brother.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.